something went on here, something went on there.
This time on TNT,
I talk about Gian Gomeshi.
And I talk about Gian Gomeshi.
And then we play a game called Who's on Man's Bridge. That's all coming up right now on TNT.
How's it going, Jonathan?
Jeremy Taggart, all night and day. What's the song? Can you name it?
One more time, please.
Jeremy Taggart, all night and day, yeah. Jeremy Taggart, he just loves to play, yeah. Jeremy nice. Taggart, nothing more to say. On Skinny Bop by Poison.
Unskinny Bop. See, I was...
Unskinny Bop.
I was starting to get the idea, and I could just sense the pursed lips of Bret Michaels.
Yep. And now the pursed forehead of Bret Michaels. Man, that guy's had a lot of surgery.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's ever seen his forehead.
I don't think they have.
Nobody has ever seen his forehead.
Jeremy, we're, I'm going to say a couple of weeks since we've last recorded.
Yes.
And we debated after the Gian Gomeshi story broke, we debated circling the wagons back and adding a segment reflecting on what had happened. In hindsight, I'm so glad we didn't, because the story has evolved so much since then, and there was so much emotion around the early kind of days of it that I think with the benefit of hindsight, maybe we'll be better able to comment on it.
Yeah, I agree. I think initially I did have a lot of anger. I guess anybody that saw that me on Twitter, I think personally, just because of the thing that everybody has been kind of saying since then, is the "Did you know about Gian?" and "Did you hear about Gian?" And when I first heard, a part of me was like, I knew it, you know, just the idea, because just we've heard how not just creepy or greasy he was, or narcissistic, but just there was an element that we had both known about from the women that either A, feared him, or had some kind of situation where there's a reason to worry about him. I heard about the choking thing, and to me that's just there was an element of that. But when I heard about the punching and the beating, that was just, it just blew my top personally, and I just couldn't believe it. But I wasn't surprised by it, but I was very angry and I was taken back definitely from it, you know.
I think, social media has changed everything. First of all, I was surprised by the number of people that rallied behind him just based on that initial Facebook post saying, oh my gosh, this is terrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
All I could think in those early moments was CBC has lost hockey. They've lost Strombo. They've lost so much. And I was talking to a friend who works there who said, it's kind of like when you work there, you feel like you're the kid sitting in the cafeteria with the terrible lunch. And everybody else has like leftover pizza and garlic fingers and fun things. And you have like a poo sandwich, and it really kind of grates on you after a while.
For sure.
All I could think was they did not want to lose him. They can't afford to lose him. So whatever it is they have or have seen must be so heinous, it left little or no room for disagreement over the issue. That's just what I kept coming back to.
Yep. And then the idea since then of hearing how he did break the story, we heard that Jesse Brown was talking about a big story coming out on CBC, a groundbreaking story. And that's apparently when Gian went to the PR firm and put together that Facebook post to the fear of what was going to happen, painted up a story. And we know that that's how it happened, because Jesse Brown was talking about the Snowden stuff, and that was the big bombshell he was talking about, and basically smoked him out. And all we know is that one little pathetic Facebook post, and to anybody at this point that's still saying, you know, we need to finally find out, or the charges have to come through, or his day in court, all of this stuff of people that say they believe him, or they want to see what happens first. Like, it's not, it's just the most beyond situation I've heard since maybe like a Casey Anthony or something like that, right, where it's like, this person is guilty 100% in my opinion, from what I've seen, from what I know. How in the world could you be a journalist or a columnist and defend this? You know, it just doesn't make any sense. And it's really, it really bothers me.
Well, it's also quite poetic that he was ultimately the architect of his own demise, as you say, by panicking when he just assumed that Jesse Brown must be talking about him, because what else would he be talking about? Yep. And he included in his kind of "my hands are clean" Facebook post, "this has always been consensual." And there are at least a dozen women who would beg to differ, starting with Lucy Descouter, my friend from Trailer Park Boys. And yeah, it's been said a lot and publicly, but man, that takes courage. And the thing that is so cool about what Lucy did is she wasn't suggesting that it happened to her more or worse or different or to a more extreme length than anyone else. She just said, "This happened to me and I didn't say it was okay."
Yeah.
And the number of people who say, like, "Well, then what, but why did you see that person again, or why did you have lunch or whatever?" That doesn't matter. It doesn't change what happened when two people thought they had an understanding of what was up and the other person changed the rules without telling them. That's not okay, full stop. And in the analysis of the story that we're going to do for the next little while, it's important to start and end with saying major kudos to those women that had the courage to come forth publicly, by name, not by name, because really the second thing, aside from CBC can't stand to lose him, is what did these women have to gain? Because the society, you know, historically would show that nothing. Yeah, they get ridiculed, they get mocked, they get death threats. He was a very popular guy, and it's interesting that we're using past tense verbs about him like he's dead.
Yeah, I know.
Like, what? So what should he do? He hasn't said anything.
I know. I mean, well, his only hope is to apologize and try and say he's going to reform himself. But I mean, even the fact that he's gone and hired a super high powered woman attorney, it kind of all points to he's going to fight this thing, and that just makes me even more upset, the fact that this is going to waste the court's time. And I know it has to be done, and the idea of it is all there, and that's how it is. But we've just heard so many stories too many times to think that this is going to have to give its day in court, when even like I heard the videos even that he brought to the executives were so gross and horrible and brutal that they couldn't do anything but get him out of the building, just because of, and you know, this is all obviously alleged, but I mean,
and this was his, like, "See guys, it's cool."
But, well, yeah, he's like, "Well, check it out. This is happening." And to be honest, like he the idea of trying to defend something just because he was looking at it as a court of law, because he may have, you know, been beating up a girl and she might have been crying that she was consenting or something like that, and just to think that this is okay because this is me, you know, looking at this and this is all good, right, fellas? Like, this will hold up in court, like almost like I'm standing my ground, or the stand your ground law in America, when it comes down to words and what they mean. And it just, I can't believe that all of these things that are out there, it's going to get its, I just can't see any defense. You know what I mean? I just don't understand it whatsoever.
Well, as I said, when it first broke a couple of weeks ago, you know, we were both kind of being asked to comment, or it was maybe assumed that we'd comment on it. My feeling was I didn't want to wedge myself into a story that wasn't about me. I didn't want to try to take away any airtime from the people that were actually involved in this and needed to be heard, which they ultimately were, which was awesome. Mm-hmm. I also work at CBC currently. I know many of the people that work on Q who were, involved certainly as coworkers and colleagues. And mostly I was so sad for the women involved, for the CBC itself. And of course, there's a whole discussion to come about who knew what when, and that's going to be really ugly.
Yeah.
But now I feel like, hey man, let's tell the people what we know about him. Maybe we'll take a break and we'll even get into who we think might replace him on a show that, for what it's worth, I think needs a new name and just a complete page turn.
Yeah.
Hang on. We'll be right back. You're listening to our You're a Strange G-Animal special.
That's great.
It raises a good question. I actually read a good article by Bill Brio, who's a TV critic in Canada. He was talking about when it's okay to make jokes about it, or if it's okay or when. And he interviewed a lot of folks from, Mike Bullard to Peter McBain, who's the executive producer on 22 Minutes. It's true. If this was in the States, all the late night talk shows would be talking about it. I can normally find things funny, even in a it's so funny because it's so inappropriate kind of way. I can't find anything funny about this yet.
I think it's because the how enormous it is. We could be dealing with Canada's biggest, sex offender in its history. So when this all comes out, you look at that as it's what it stands for, and there's nothing funny about that, and it's one of the few things where I can't look at his face. I don't like to. It bothers me if I see a story and he's there in the picture of him. It really is. It's beyond. I think it's because of the idea of the amount of victims and just the way people feel. And like you said before, when it happens, it's difficult for people to try and understand, to come forward. And it's just a sad situation. And it's way too fresh. And the fact that you see stories in newspapers about how he's, glorifying the lawyer and justifying the actual law and the idea of if he could get off and that he could possibly get off if A, B, and C happen. That stuff just makes it all the more difficult to joke about, because, if that were to happen, then what's funny about that,
It's interesting that for someone whose show was so popular, He was a very divisive character. Like, people seem to in equal parts adore him and roll their eyes behind his back, right? He is a cheesy guy.
Yeah. I mean, when you guest hosted the show, there was the story about him always blocking guests whenever people were guest hosting, and that happened with you, didn't it?
Yeah, I'd call it in a couple of favors and the folks that I could get access to. It's a tricky thing, guest hosting that show. First of all, I know from folks who worked on Sheila Rogers' show that when Gian filled in on her show, he wouldn't play. Normally what they do in the summer is the third block of the show is a repeat of the main host's interview from earlier that year.
Yeah.
So if I'm hosting, like, here's Gian's conversation with Leonard Cohen, whatever.
Yeah.
Gian, when he was filling in for Sheila, refused to play Sheila repeats in the third block. He's like, no, I'm doing all original stuff when I'm here. And I know from friends that worked on the show, he was the kind of guy that would keep folks there, till 9:30 at night, just while he said, hi, I'm Gian Gomeshi. Let's try it again. Hi, I'm Gian Gomeshi. No, can I try it again? Just like so unnecessarily demanding. So
wow.
When I filled in on that show, first of all, you have to play a Gian repeat in the third block. Second of all, you have to say, I'm Jonathan Torrance sitting in for Gian Gomeshi. But the culture in that place, let's not lose sight of the fact these are some of the premier minds and journalists in the country. You don't get to work on that show if you don't have the chops to back it up.
And let's not forget that show is those producers and writers.
It sure is, man.
They prepare the interviews, they prepare the questions, they do the research. I mean, that and there's an army of them that go out there every day to find guests. So the
unreal.
They are the show, and the fact that he kind of takes credit for all of that is disgusting just as much. And you had the opportunity to see that firsthand.
Well, and I know that there was a culture there a little bit where his approval did mean a lot. He was an unpredictable guy, as has been well documented. He did kind of play people off against each other that worked there. All I know about my experience there, I can say two things. One, I respect the workload that he generated or consumed, because
absolutely, for sure,
he read every book, he went to every play, he listened to every CD, he watched every movie. That, in his defense, I will say, is astonishing. Because when I've done the show for a week before, it takes you a couple of weeks to recover just from the sheer volume. Because you don't want to be talking to Anne Rice if you haven't read her book.
Yeah.
But the second thing is, so I would do things like, it's a nice summer day, let's get some frozen yogurt. Let's take 10 minutes, have a break in the afternoon, and just kind of hang out and chat. And everybody, you know, put your computer mouse down and turn around and let's just hang out.
Yeah.
So someone posted on social media, I think Facebook, saying, hey, Jonathan's here, we had some frozen yogurt. Gian called that person from Turkey, where he was on vacation, and said, do you hate me? Take that down.
No way.
Yeah. Just tiny and petty and small. So I used a couple of favors to book a couple of A-list guests. Suddenly they were unbooked because Gian would call and say, what are you doing? He can't interview that person when I'm not there. So I would get the author of The Pooh Review and the band The Poohs and garbage. Not total garbage, don't get me wrong. I interviewed some great folks, but anybody of any marquee value, or in retrospect, anybody that was maybe physically appealing to him, would suddenly be unbooked. And there was always a culture of protection for him there, with people in charge saying, well, you know, we don't really like to do phone or interviews. It's better if they're in studio.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not really why they were unbooked. They were unbooked because someone had a little hissy fit.
Yeah, for sure.
But it seems like for the folks that worked on that show, it was an exhausting, like the work itself is hard enough. You don't need to make people live in fear or in hope that you'll praise them or whatever. And that was certainly the culture there. My first interaction with him dates back to probably around the year 2000 when he started doing Play on CBC News World. And I remember he called me out of the blue. I didn't even know him. And he wanted to ask my opinion on what he should do career-wise. Like, kind of wanted to talk about his legacy.
Wow.
And I'd never met someone who thought in those terms about their own work or body of work.
Yeah.
Like, most of us, as freelancers in Canada, if the checks are clearing and you haven't been evicted, you won. Right? It's just the constant treading water, trying to keep it going.
Mm-hmm.
But to have the moxie, so to speak, to think of what is my legacy going to be to Canada,
and then asking people's opinion on what you should do to get there quick.
Yeah,
like, what do you think of this? When I do this, I remember seeing Moxie Fruvis like live a couple times in the college day, like of when they were kind of that doing the colleges and stuff, and my friends. I saw some shows and I just always kind of thought of it as comedy rock or whatever. But I'd seen him around and just kind of thought he was just fast, laugh it up kind of, you know, Larry from Three's Company vibe. You know, that's
right.
Kind of what I always in the early days thought. And then when he got the show on Q, I came on there once and again, I think it was, we were doing a topic on drums, and of course, you know, that would be all I know about. So I got the call for that to talk about that.
Yeah, but wouldn't he tell you he was a drummer too?
Yeah, and it was like him talking about his experiences and trying to tell me about like what he thought drumming was, and I was just like, there was a big long introduction, and you know, I can understand how Billy Bob got upset because those intros are just so full of himself, you know. It just makes you angry right off the top. But I remember he went on about like for 20 minutes about how his numbers were better than Peter Zosky's, and I was like, Canada had like 20 million people when that show was on, and you're
on the air.
Yeah, no, this was off the air, so this discussion was off the air. But just that's the conversation, always about like what I'm doing, how well I'm doing. This is all blowing up, it's great, and it's just like you're just exasperated and tired, and you just want to get out of there, constant. And the idea of that kind of just that nonstop greasiness was just too much for me, definitely.
It is impossibly earnest, and he's never really a critic of anything because everything's kind of wonderful and you know, buttery. But that just shines a light on the divide between this charming host and this nightmare.
Yeah,
so crazy.
Definitely.
So
too much.
When I was on Facebook a long time ago, I get a message from this girl. And she was a Facebook friend. I didn't know her. She said, "You work at CBC, right? Do you know this Gian Gomeshi guy?" And I was like, you know, sort of met him in passing, talked about his legacy or whatever.
She said, about his legacy, yeah.
I met him at a thing, and I, you know, thought he was interesting and charming, but he came on pretty strong. And I'm not really sure what I should do because he asked me out. So I wrote back and said, "Well, I don't know you, and I don't really know him, but I guess if you were my sister, what I'd say is, if you want to take me out on a date, that sounds fun, but just so you know, no monkey business for 6 months. And I guess if he still wants to take you out, then you know his intentions are true."
Mm-hmm.
So she tells him what I've said, not that I said it, of course, but like, "Well, you know, if you want to take me out, that sounds fun, but no funny stuff for 6 months. And she forwarded me the response she got back from him that made me blush, because he didn't know her at all. She didn't know me at all. And suddenly I'm in possession of this email that's so hideous. I think it was written in a like kind of flirty way, but it was like it was establishing the boundaries, like, "Okay, you say no funny business, but just to be clear, does that mean you can't S my C for hours while I L your P?" Like, it was heinous. And this was like flirty Facebook message to someone he doesn't know.
Unbelievable.
Which I think begs the question, like, it's not surprising that it happened. It's surprising that it took this long, because it seems like there's a long history of putting things down in print, right?
Yeah.
So this anxiety disorder and this Teddy Big Ears thing,
oh man,
which is so weird and dark, but the anxiety disorder must be born out of, in part, feeling like you're a terrible person and knowing that's going to come out at some point, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I mean, that there's definitely some, well, we're dealing with someone who has some major, major internal mental issues. And the bottom line is those type of people don't really, they shouldn't have the opportunity to make choices in the free world, because too many people become victim to those choices.
So nature versus nurture, are you born that way or you're made that way, or it's a combination?
I always think that
with extreme examples.
Yeah, well, I think that type of person is that, just they are that way. How can you develop those kind of tendencies, like the need to physically hurt somebody to get off? You know what I mean?
Right.
To need to brutalize somebody to get sexual satisfaction from that's not something that you can develop. I can't. That's something that, that is inherent, and there's some serious issues that need to be addressed. And the fact that it was kind of going on for 30 years, it just, that's what we're talking about here. You know, 30 years of just roaming free and taking whatever he can get, and who knows where he went and what he did that he got away with. That's what's that's what's scary.
Well, it's got to be just the tip of the iceberg, you have to assume, right? These brave folks that have come forward. Yep. If it dates back to university and it potentially involves dudes, like, it, who knows how broad the story is. Do you think the police are going to lay charges?
I hope so. I mean, I think when you hit somebody and there's proof enough of it, I mean, that's reason to press charges. I don't know why it wouldn't. It happens all the time where somebody is domestically abused or abused, and they go to the police a long time afterwards, and there's just enough, there's definitely enough reason and enough evidence from people around them to press charges. It happens a lot, so I can't see why it wouldn't happen.
Has this been the fastest, biggest, most spectacular, forgive me for using that word, fall from grace in Canadian history? Must be.
Yeah, definitely, isn't it? But it's not a full fall yet. We're just kind of still at the beginning of it, to be honest, because look at OJ when that happened. Everybody thought that it was over, and here, you know, he ended up getting away with it, you know?
Well, if you believe what you read, that Sunday meeting between him and CBC, they were waiting for him to say, okay, my bad. Because Thursday is when they saw the stuff. Yeah. Then Sunday, they were giving him okay, let's give him one more chance to come in and say, I need help, I'm in trouble, whatever. And they didn't. He didn't.
Yeah.
So that's when they were like, well, we have to let you go then.
Yeah.
That would suggest that he's not aware yet. Like, I wonder, do you think he's reading all the social media stuff? Do you think he knows just how bad it is? Or do you think he's in a log cabin somewhere thinking defiantly, wait till I get to tell my side?
How could he possibly think there's his side? So I think we're talking about a guy who always has had issue with what people think about him. Like, what about your buddy, the guy who posted the picture on Facebook and of the frozen yogurt, and he lost it from Turkey.
Right.
And just if those kind of things get in his cage, the fact that he's still fighting it by getting these high-priced fancy attorneys and PR firms, we're dealing with a psychopath, I think.
Well, yeah, it suggests to me that he still doesn't get it, or still doesn't really think he's responsible. He thinks he's the victim of a smear campaign. But at the same time, like, then why isn't he holding a press conference and pushing back or whatever?
I think because he thinks, if I can get away with this, then I'm going to try. I'm going to do, if there, you know, we've all seen the greasy lawyer on TV that talks about stuff where it's like, how can you say this person isn't guilty? They're there. Those people exist. And he's going to that idea. What can I get away with in law to somehow squeeze through this? I don't think it's a, I didn't do it. I don't think he, I can't see him thinking that he didn't do it. That's more, what can I do to get out of this? You know?
Well, one thing's for sure, his goose is cooked. Like, he's done at CBC, because there are a lot of things as a celebrity, I gather, you can recover from. A DUI, a drug problem. This is not something you can, nor should you be able to, recover from. So enough about the past and Giancameschi. Let's take a break. And when we come back, let's look to the future. What should CBC do with Q? Who should host it? Maybe it should be Jeremy Taggart. Hang on.
Cocktail, please.
And we're back. And I'm speaking to the new host of Q, Jonathan Torrens?
Not true, bud.
No?
I'm going to tell you something.
I think you'd be great, to be honest. Like,
well, thank you. I think you would too.
I think I'd be too far gone. I just kind of grew up watching CBC, but not being CBC. You know what I mean? Do you know what that means? You know what I'm talking about?
I do.
But I think, to be honest, like it just that station could use some levity with those issues, especially with what's happened and that place. And there are a lot of people at CBC that are talented and great, but I just think that you could offer a little bit of levity with all that other stuff that they do.
Well, I appreciate that, bud. Having hosted the show before, and as I mentioned, the workload is insane. I think it's a young single person's game.
Agreed.
I was a huge fan of Peter Zosky, as you know. I loved the humanity and the microscope he used to look into small life. Kind of, he was the master of Canadianity.
Yeah,
and it really was less culture in some ways, and more just the minutiae of what it means to be Canadian. That show I'd love to do, but the workload for somebody with a young family at this stage in my so-called career, don't get me wrong, it's not like the phone's ringing off the hook, but yeah, there are some interesting names in the mix. Mostly, really, Jeremy, if I'm being honest with you, it feels great to know that I don't want it and to know why I don't.
That makes sense. I appreciate that, and that's a perfect answer. Who would you recommend? I've heard Shad would be a good host, I think. Smart guy, and I think he knows about music for the right reasons, and I think he's a genuine fella. Like him.
Me too. And a smart cat and a great communicator and all that stuff. It's kind of a weird hybrid gig because I've been in that chair, for example, when a major celebrity from the world of pop culture dies, and suddenly you're kind of doing live coverage of sudden death.
Yeah.
And like breaking news and new information. Like, it's kind of a newsy gig and kind of a current affairs gig at the same time. So some guys who or gals who would be great at doing the music side aren't necessarily good with the kind of breaking news side. It really is a specific animal. First thing, I think they should lose the name.
Yeah, definitely.
Jian was the co-creator of Q. I think they should ditch Q, especially now that Arif Noorani, the executive producer, is gone. Not gone from CBC, by the way. Q.
What about the idea of, like, just, you know, it seems people are leaving because they might have known what's happening, and that's kind of becoming the new question that in the press is, you know, what did CBC know and for how long, the fact that if people were coming forward and they were actually being told to quiet up or leave, or, you know, they were being shunned, it seems.
Find a way to make the workplace less toxic for yourself.
Yeah, and it just seems like if that was going on, and I'm sure I've heard enough information that it kind of was, then everybody who works there, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, if you knew about it and didn't do anything, you should kind of have to pay the price for that, because that's just how things go. It's like, if this is as bad as it is, and you knew about certain things and the fact that this culture was being accepted, you kind of have to go with the ship.
Well, it's interesting that RF has left that show, but not CBC. He's starting on a new show there. Because they had to do something. It was publicly acknowledged that someone complained to that person. They didn't handle it very well. And even if it's just public perception and not proven, though I feel like it could be, they have to do something. Here's what I think it is. As I said, knowing the people that work on that show, there's a big divide between, I think Jian's greasy with women and he punches people in the face.
Yeah, no, I'm not talking about the people that work there that have heard stories. I'm saying people that actually knew about it and were like, you know, making it harder for that person as opposed to helping them.
Right.
You know, people that were telling them to quiet down like that. Anybody who was doing that kind of stuff, you just that's part of it. I mean,
they should be accountable for sure.
If you had any knowledge of, you know, videos or keeping stuff quiet because you're trying to organize and help this crazy culture of Xi'an, then you're getting corrupt too, man.
Big time. I mean, as he said, he's been working with CBC and they've been working with him since the spring to figure out how to best handle this when it comes out. But in CBC's defense, they were taking what he was saying at face value. He was playing the crazy ex-girlfriend thing. She has a vendetta. It sounds like Xi'an thinks Jesse was always out to get his job. Jesse was fired from CBC. So Xi'an would kind of shrug those things off as, you know, this is a crazy ex coming to get me. If CBC was taking that at face value, mm-hmm. then you could see why they would work with him to try to manage this.
Well, no, but not sexual harassment in the workplace. You know what
but
I mean?
Of course, but the managers that are there now weren't there then.
Yeah.
Is at least the way it's being spun.
Mm-hmm.
My big fear in all this is that once the who knew what when of it all comes out, it's going to be the end of CBC.
Yeah,
it could. I'm not suggesting for a moment that it's okay to cover these things up or gloss them over, or there's no question. I mean, they've learned their lesson about associating a brand with a person. Because this, like, it's the last way in the world you should be thinking about it, but this business model, we're going to make this show for not that much money, and it's going to be in 170 markets in the States, and we'll get a little money from each of those markets, and that'll help us pay for it. That's a way CBC could continue to exist. So mm-hmm. this is devastating to them emotionally, perception standpoint, from a business standpoint. This is the worst possible thing that could happen.
Yeah, no, agree.
So you're the executive producer of Q. You start tomorrow. What's the first thing you do? And who's on your short list?
It's called H. It's a whole new deal. Who's hosting?
Wait, is H, isn't that horse tranquilizer, or that's K?
Yeah, it's easy. Careful. H is okay because it's nice and easy to chill out.
Right.
No, we would change the name to something completely different. We would hire somebody that is a little funnier, like I said. If not you, maybe Norm MacDonald would be a good move.
Well, he's certainly in the mix, suddenly. Yeah, his brother Neil works at CBC.
Yeah, and he's looking for a gig.
I found it surprising that he threw his hat in the ring.
I love that. I think it's probably got a lot to do with his brother, to be honest. And we know that he loves sports. You know, he's done all kinds of stuff for tweeting, live tweeting sports all the time. So I think he's passionate about things. And to be honest, I think he could use something like that. And maybe, I don't know, he seems like he's such an intelligent guy that I'd be actually, you know, as I would be impressed to, I would listen to it for sure. I never listened to Q before. So as interesting as, like, I'm excited to see on a maybe 10 times what I was just speaking of, but Colbert being Colbert that we haven't seen before hosting Letterman, you know, which will be happening soon. That will be kind of the same idea. It's like, this is a smart guy. It's going to put something together, apparently, you know, but I'm excited to watch. I would do the same for Norm MacDonald on CBC Radio.
Well, I haven't listened to his podcast, but apparently it's great.
His podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you haven't heard it either. I didn't even know he had a podcast.
I didn't know till I read that a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
So what would you do? Would you rotate folks through? Like, everybody gets kind of 2-week trial and then Canada decides? Like, how would you handle the actual execution of the change? Or would you just say, H with Norm MacDonald starts next Monday.
N. And just N. Put his face. What? Yeah. If when you're dealing with somebody of his stature, I don't think you need to have a revolving door. Just you go right. with it. Run with it. There's talented people in there. Is how come? I guess Buck 65. He digs his where he's at.
And, well, this is the other thing. Tom Power.
Yeah, who Tom Power the morning show. He's great. Hosting. He's great too.
He's great, but he works on CBC Radio too. So if you move him, suddenly you have another problem to fix.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think Tom's great and really likable and warm and charming. Jan Arden is a name that comes up a lot.
Jan would be good. She's funny, right? Yeah. She likes a good laugh. It's a big workload. That would definitely be a different pace.
Yeah.
For Jan.
Yeah. Who else comes up a lot? A guy named Wob Kanu. There are a lot of folks that could do it. I think Pia Chattopadhyay, who's been filling in, is great. I like the timbre of her voice, and she's part of a Canadian journalism dynasty. Her husband Peter Armstrong is a news guy at CBC, and his mom writes for The Star.
Those are all. Let's just go with your list. I'm cool with Norm. To be honest, I would like I said, when you're talking to a guy who didn't listen to the show, probably not best to ask him who he would have to host.
Right. You know what I think I'd do? If I learned a lesson from what's happened recently, I'd probably have Tom Power and Pia Chattopadhyay co-host.
Boom.
She has a news background. He has a music background. That way, there isn't one face that's synonymous with this new show. Nobody can get above their raisin, so to speak.
I dig it. I love
and
it.
And also, I guess the thing about Norm, and I love him. He's great. But he might be a bigger name than a lot of the people he's interviewing. I'm just asking, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, it depends. Sometimes people that, like comedians or people that are funny are great at doing interviews. So, I mean, look at from Jack Parr to Jack Benny to now, they're the best interviewers are funny guys. So generally I would say it's a good move. Like, look at Jimmy Fallon, to me is funnier now in the role that he's in than he was on SNL by
a million. Man.
So I think you might thrive with those circumstances.
Yeah, it's not a total non sequitur. I guess the first thing they have to do is find a new producer if they don't already have that.
No, well, there's so many people that, like you said,
so Peter Zosky always said everybody thinks interviewing is really easy, but Zosky said the best interviewers are the ones who, like, your subject is in the front of the canoe paddling madly and you're just in the back steering them.
Yeah, for sure.
And I took an interviewing course with a guy named John Sawatsky, and he said, the interviewer is the star of the show, but the interviewee has to be the star of the interview.
Mm-hmm.
And that's critical.
Yeah, definitely.
Because interviewers often, when they're big names or comedians, try to go for the joke instead of let your guest shine. Mm-hmm. And that's a skill, man.
Totally. To know what to ask for and to know not to talk too much.
Yeah.
There's nothing worse than a guy hosting his own shows telling stories about his own life to the guy who's sitting in the chair he's supposed to be interviewing.
Oh, man.
You know, who's the best at that is that Frank D'Angelo guy. You ever see his show at night? It's just he'll start talking about himself. It's like, that's so funny that this guy wants to be on the air and all he does is, you know, blow his own horn.
And by the end, you get to, you know, your guest just answers yes or no to the question.
Yeah. Let me answer this for you.
It's brutal.
Oh.
And a lot of hosts do that. And part of this interviewing course, they showed clips of Bill Clinton, and obviously a really smart guy. And he just watched the interviewer lob a marshmallow over to him. There's something, they called it the menu question. Like, President Clinton, would you say that you did this to serve the soldiers, or would you say it was more this, or was your thinking more this? And all they do is pick one of the phrases that you've said and just address that. Message tracking. Clinton never said when he was speaking. He was just a machine.
Mm-hmm. You love yourself some Bill Clinton. I know that.
I love myself some Bill Clinton. Tell me on 9/11 you didn't feel like, all right, this George Bush thing is over. Somebody get me Clinton. Stat.
Bring him back.
Bring back Bubba.
You'll like watch a Clinton speech. Like people will watch, listen to music.
Yeah. I'll listen to a Clinton speech the way you'll watch a 2.5 Men.
You're killing me with this. This is 3 times now with the 2.5 Men. Like
we better stop before we get a thing saying there's tension between us.
I'm more of an all in the family if I can get it, but there ain't what is it, TV? What do we have in Canada? The old TV show where they play
Metropolis. It was, but it doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, is there not like an oldies show? Like that's, I need me some All in the Family, but 2.5 Men. Hey,
should we play a quick round of TV show theme songs just because we've been so heavy?
Yeah, we got to do something. We got to think up some game. We're coming back with a game.
Come back, will you?
Let me ask you this right quick. You know what I mean?
Jonathan.
Jeremy.
Let's lighten things up a little bit.
I am so glad you said that because I was feeling the same thing.
Let's play a game called Who's on Man's Bridge?
I love this game. And if it hasn't swept the nation already, it will be once this airs. Goes without saying, a lot of things are changing at CBC. Fortunately, Peter Mansbridge is one of the things that isn't. And he, you know, something like the shooting in Ottawa happens and you just gather around the CBC like a hearth. He calmly gives context and perspective, and he's the voice of reason and soothingness. So we thought we'd play a game that has to do with Peter Mansbridge. Who's on Mansbridge? It works like this. We'll play each other clips of a Peter Mansbridge interview. You have to guess who he's interviewing. Are you going first or I'm going first?
Let me go first.
Okay, who's on Mansbridge? Here it comes.
Okay, here we go.
All right.
In those council chambers. You guys called it a coup d'etat. Is that what it was?
Oh, it's a Ford brother.
Yay! There you go.
Nice.
You got it.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Ford brother.
The Fords. The good Fords.
One. Listen to this one.
A coup d'etat.
This is a member of a Canadian band. Who's on Mansbridge? Take a listen.
How have you stayed together? You know, because you're right, so many bands, break up, break apart, move off in different directions. And I remember talking, not that long ago to Robbie Robertson about, the band and the breakup. Yeah. And a lot of it was due to, what happens on the road. And he felt you can't go on like that, living like that. That doesn't seem to have been a problem for Rush.
Yeah. Especially then that would be Geddy Lee. I had a feeling it was Geddy Lee.
Did you?
Because to be honest, when you ask someone like, how have you been around so long? I think Canadian. It's like, well, he's either talking about Gord Downie or Geddy Lee.
Right.
So I figured it definitely Geddy Lee. I didn't.
All right. From two words. You got it.
Nice one.
All right. Hit me. Who's on Mansbridge?
Okay.
Here's my second one.
It's interesting you call it work because I'm sure you don't need to do this if you didn't want it. I mean, every month there must be like an unbelievable royalty check drops in the mailbox at the Lightfoot.
Lightfoot.
I blew myself up with the question.
It's okay. I liked it.
Yeah.
We're even because I blew myself up with the Rush one. All right. Take a listen to this one. Who's on Mansbridge? Take a listen.
Well, we know you're speaking from experience. Yeah. When you consider that since that golden goal, you haven't played a full season because of it.
Who is it? Do I need to keep it going?
That would be Sid the Kid. Sidney Crosby.
Correct. This is the game. We just need to play Mansbridge's question and you have to guess who he's talking to.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's good. Okay, hit me.
Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
Part of that trade involves the energy sector. A lot of oil and gas comes
from Barack Obama.
Oh, nice one. Very good.
You know how I know it?
How?
Mr. President, thank you for doing this.
I picked the same exact clip. Who's on Man's Bridge? It's a game where everybody wins.
Yeah, and I think we ran out because you picked one of my clips now.
Have I ever told you that when I was hosting, I was one of the correspondents for the Y2K CBC News coverage in Charlottetown?
Mm-hmm.
Did I tell you this?
I don't know. It sounds tantalizing.
I'd practiced this. Tonight, the eyes of the nation turn to its birthplace, where the small island with the big heart cradled in the waves of the Atlantic Ocean, blah, 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 blah. This was going to be my first, like, right out of the gate hit in the middle of the day. Like, anticipation is building and some 10,000 folks expected to gather tonight. And Peter is anchoring the coverage, of course. He throws to me out in Charlottetown, Jonathan Torrance standing by in Charlottetown. What can you tell us, Jonathan? I open my mouth and say, Petal, what got his name wrong in the first two syllables of what was going to be a very long day? And he laughed. So here is my chance to be super journalist.
Super I'm not a journalist. And Petal, I'm killing it.
Yeah. Almost like when Norma Kent signed off on Newsworld by saying, I'm Norma, word that sort of sounds like Kent. But is a swear word.
Ooh,
are you with me?
Yeah, yeah.
And then she stopped and said, I mean, Kent. Would have been better if she just let it sail there, but she went back to put a Band-Aid on a massive head wound. Well, bud, that concludes another episode of TNT. It's our 20th episode. Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary. Let's have some tea.
Let's have some tea.
Let's have some cereal.
To 20 more.
Cereal, tea, and a few laughs. We'll see you next week, Jonathan.
Jeremy, take care. Looking forward to the next time we get a chance to chat.
G'day.
See you, Petal. Ah, I did it again.
Oh, jeez.
Come back, will you?
Come back, will you? Come back, will you?